And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wilden. How's it going, Johannes?
And here we are, after what should be an exciting, happy week of hockey. I don't know, with a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, you know, they came off, obviously the Canadians had their little mini COVID vacation, which drew the ire of some other teams, which maybe we'll talk about later. but yeah, they came out as a team you would expect, I guess. They looked fresh and rested, and they played two very good games, especially against Ottawa. It's funny, we were watching the game on, maybe a couple of friends were watching it, like, you know, FaceTiming each other, and, you know, we're watching going like, oh, wow, because usually this year the Canadians and Senators have kind of been tight and annoyingly, you know, difficult games for the Canadians, and so it was just kind of nice. We were commenting how, oh, it's nice that the Canadians are actually, you know, kind of beating the Senators like they should, because, you know, with all due respect to the Senators, you know, they're not a very good team yet. And all that kind of came crashing down last night in that pretty embarrassing game by the Canadians, especially defensively. It was just a complete, you know, bleep show in their own end, which has been a problem, I think, a lot of the year. I don't know. That's sort of how where I came down on it.
So I guess we'll do reverse chronological order.
I know you probably have some thoughts. So what are your thoughts about how the week ended last night?
No, it's just disappointing to me, and I hear a lot.
Well, if you want to start positive, you can. You sound like you had some thoughts.
Sort of Price defenders in my timeline, and you know you can't stop a tip, and you know defensive breakdowns. So, I mean, he let 5 goals in for the 5th time this season. That. You can't do that. You can't do that if you're making $5 million or $6 million or $7 million. You can't make it if you're making $10 million. And he just doesn't look very good to me. Like, I know he made some great saves, and I recognize that not every goal last night was his fault. But, like, at some point, we're running out of excuses here. You can't just, you know, keep on saying, well, it's not, you know, this or that, or the, you know, he had different pads on or whatever. It's like you got to make some of those stops, particularly the first one. I don't understand why Brady Tkachuk could just flip it around and put it in the other side like that without Price even basically looking up. And I thought the rebound on the second goal was brutal. Some people had problems with some of the later goals, but I don't know. I take your point. The defense was bad. Kulak looked like he didn't know what he was doing, and Petrie had a uncharacteristically bad night and ended -4, I think, or -5. I mean, just overall bad. But what was interesting to me was I was watching the game through the second period, and I thought, oh, they're still in this. Like they haven't given up. They're answering. This might be one of those where, you know, it's a 50-50 game, and they come through and pull it out on the third. And instead, we really just saw, they made a mess in their bed in the third period, and it was disappointing that we couldn't. I was really ready to be super excited about the Canadians after this week. 3 good games in a row, and as I say, we got 2 very dominant performances and 1 terrible performance.
Yeah, I'm not going to say Price isn't to blame. I think you tend to be a little bit more critical of Price than me. But yeah, some of those goals were not great, and I don't think he had a good game, but, you know, like you said, he got 0 help from his defense. It was a complete gong show, I thought. You know, despite some of the goals he should have had, and then, like, the Tkachuk one, I agree with, but, you know, I'll let the defense kind of off the hook on a power play, because you're short a man, and they just, you know, he was the open guy. But, you know, the two-on-one there where, you know, the shot he had to make to save with his pad on the, you know, I don't know, Gallagher was trying so hard to get back, but instead of playing the guy, he skated past, you know, he passed him and left him alone in front, yeah. You know. With the Dadonov goal where Kokkinemi and Edmondson both just vacate the slot, so he's all alone. You know, it's stuff like that where it's just kind of what the, like, what are you doing? And it's been a problem since Claude Julien took over the team, so I don't know if it's, you know, we would talk about, you know, maybe it was sort of a square peg round hole situation where they were trying to get them to do things that they weren't possibly were good at. Whatever it is, it was not good at all last night. And to kind of get, and not to say, I mean, Ottawa's a young team with a lot of promising players, but they're far from a complete team, right? And it seems like whenever the Canadians play them, for the most part, Ottawa just knows how to play Montreal for some reason. And it's frustrating as a Habs fan because you want this team to be, you know, a serious contender or playoff team. And then, you know, they run into Ottawa where – and it's always kind of – everyone's kind of dreading it because for whatever reason, Ottawa knows how to cap score. I don't know. They play Montreal really well. And it's just frustrating because, to your point, they played two very good games and one of them against the Senators. And so, you know, we were like, hey, it's going to be a good week. It's going to be a good week. They're going to, you know, it's going to be – technically four straight wins considering the last game before they were in the protocol, they won as well. So it would have been nice to get on a bit of a winning streak here because, you know, the Canadians have kind of been trading wins back and forth since Ducharme took over. I think this was the first multi-game winning streak since he was hired. I think a lot of Habs fans are kind of feeling like us, where it's just sort of this disappointing feeling. And, you know, this would have been a nice time to put some... to collect some wins because the schedule now, because they had those four games had to be rescheduled. It's the schedule is now doing them absolutely no favors. I think they have like 20, the last 22 games have to be played over the next 36 days or something like that. I saw somewhere, maybe 38 days. So, you know, I'm pretty sure it's a four games a week at least. So it's going to be brutal and rough. And, you know, it feels like a bit of a missed opportunity.
Four games in a row.
Almost seems five like a bit of a theme for
sorry,
this year,
four games a week for four games a week for 5 weeks in a row. That is no joke. I mean, and then you think about all that, they get a week off and the playoffs start. So it's I don't know any team has had that kind of schedule. Certainly not in my memory, but I mean that is an intense that's a big ask.
Well, no. Well, it's partly because of, obviously, the condensed schedule and all that, but it's kind of crazy. I mean, I think we're going to start seeing more lineup juggling, I think, just because you need to keep guys fresh the way the schedule works out. You know, I think we're going to see a lot more Jake Allen. I think, you know, it was nice to see Michael Frolik finally get into the lineup. It's good that they have a lot of NHL bodies that can rotate in and out. Which I think is what they're going to have to do because, yeah, the schedule is very bad. Like, not... it's very difficult just, you know, to have to play all these games in this short period of time.
Yeah,
it's,
but it's also...
It's
good,
a big
it's
ask for these players
to get
because,
us what,
you know,
we've
obviously
been
it's not a normal situation.
Weber doesn't need to play every game. Price doesn't need to play every game. Like, we've got to figure out a way to protect these guys. Yeah, well, manage the minutes, manage the usage, and, like, what's the point of having depth if you never use it, right?
The thing with Weber, though, like, I agree, like, he needs to be managed, and it wouldn't be a bad thing kind of to go a bit of the basketball route where you kind of give guys nights off here and there. But the problem is when you're in a dogfight for a playoff spot,
well,
you can't really do that. And also, you take him out of the lineup, who's playing for him? You know what I mean? Like, for as troubling for as bad as he's been, or for as sort of like, you know, he kind of looks like a shadow of himself pretty, like, this year especially. Who there's no one they have in the depth in the lineup or you know in the taxi squad that can really fill his role even if he's he's not what he was. They have no one to sort of take up that role anyway. Plus he's the captain, so I don't imagine that happening. I think you're right in your thinking, but I'm just thinking logically from the Habs perspective. There's no way they're doing that
for the playoffs. This team, you know. Without a solid decor, we're in a lot of trouble, as we saw last night. And the idea that he's going to be able to play that many minutes and be effective, I think, is fantasy land. And, you know, we're just hoping there's no injuries. We're just hoping they find a way to sort of make it through. I think, I don't know where you are with the 538 guys, but they had a really interesting hockey podcast that they transcribed, and they provided some data. And I don't want to jinx anything, but basically their view based on the data is that the Canadians are a shoo-in for the playoffs. Something like 96% certain that they will make it, just given what the two other teams would have to do to challenge. Yeah, I mean, this is just like the kind of run they'd have to go on. And now with Vancouver, it's even more complicated to figure out. So I just quickly on Ottawa, though, that's an exciting team to watch. I hate them, but like they're good and they're fast and they're young and they're playing like they don't care, kind of. Like there's just an element of relentlessness that you hate to see if you're cheering for the other team, but you can't. I can't help but respect it, even if I detest it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? They're a young team, so they're kind of playing with a bit of reckless abandon, I guess, and since there's not no expectations on them, they can sort of, they're a bit freed of the expectations to sort of go and do whatever they, sort of to play, not to play however they want, but sort of, they don't have to deal, like, you know, results aren't necessarily what people are expecting just yet. So, yeah, you know, it's funny, right? Because the Senators dead, they definitely went the rebuild route, which both you and I were kind of hoping the Canadians would do, and they didn't do it, you know, they didn't fully commit to it. And obviously there's no guarantees it'll work, but it, like you said, it is kind of, not. It is, well, it's a team you don't like to cheer for, so it's frustrating, but yeah, it's like they're young and fast and exciting, even though, you know, you can see how maybe, okay, the wins aren't coming yet, but they can come. This team's going to grow together, and, you know, I mean, if you're a Senators fan, you're just worried about Eugene Melnyk's ability to want to actually pay the players. But that's another problem. But the only thing is, we also see them when they play the Canadians, right? And it seems like they're always up for those games. Because, I mean, I've
especially
seen them get blown
Edmonton.
Out by
Edmonton
teams
has Ottawa's
don't live.
I mean, Ottawa's played well against so kinda, the other teams in the North. So it's but you. Yes.
Yeah. They're pesky. That's the word, right? They don't go away. They're not usually, I mean, there are nights when they're not going, it's going to be ugly, I think. But most of the time, like, their whole thing is effort, right? That's what they're trying to be hard to play against, and they just never stop. And that's what they're doing. And then apparently, you know, against Montreal, it seems to work.
And one more thing about the game
Montreal
last night,
the team's life very, very difficult.
The week at a glance, but I think it is interesting that our goal scorers were our acquisitions this season. Toffoli and Anderson. Anderson with two. I just sort of suggests to me, like, we're really lucky that we that Bergevin made those pickups, because otherwise I don't know where the other, I mean, I know that, well, I think Byron had a shot, Lehkonen had a couple really good chances. I really liked how the Canadiens are moving the puck, especially in the second period. I saw some complaints in my timeline that, like, it was always one more pass than was absolutely necessary. But, like, you start to see the Dominic Ducharme thing with the short passes and the sort of the attack triangle, and there's always opportunities to find open guys for shots. And maybe they didn't finish as much as they needed to last night, but what you see clearly is that unless we figure out what's going on defense, the rest of the game doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with your point about sort of how the offense looks and how, you know, his sort of system is starting to get implemented a bit better. And I mean, not the Canadiens have played bad, but, you know, I take your point that they're looking a bit better offensively, but yeah, until they figure out their own end, it's going to be a weird, frustrating end of the year. Because, I mean, I guess the other thing that was also frustrating about how bad they played on Saturday was because of how pretty good they played, you know, the two other games where they shut out the Oilers and they held the Senators, got one late goal, but, you know, they really shut down the Edmonton Oilers in that game. They won 4-0. I mean, they had, what, 16 shots all game? And it was just those two were like, okay, maybe they've figured out something. Maybe the time off they were able to work on something that they figured out, and then they have an effort like they did on Saturday. And you just feel like you're back to the drawing board because it was some of the same stupid mistakes we've seen them make for the past 3 years. Because I really liked what I saw
Was it Monday? No, it was Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday night. A couple things like right off. Nick Suzuki looked really good for the rest. Kokkonen looked way more confident. He just the way he was carrying himself. And I know we'll get to the, McDavid not being very Christ-like on Easter week. But we'll get to. Yeah, I think I had a tweet about that. That was even better. I think. What did I say? Connor McJesus wasn't very Christ-like on that hit. Yeah, that was the full points on that one. But just overall, like, they came out, they were skating, they were immediately involved. They had the early goal, and they sort of just shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. And that's the thing they say. If you want to play these strong teams, you really have to engage with their strongest players. And I am curious about your take on the hit, because I have a couple of thoughts given the NHL's reaction. But just in general, the energy that they brought, it didn't look like they had lost a step from the previous week, despite a week off. And it was a dominant performance, and one that made me really happy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Habs fan, it's kind of hard not to have enjoyed that game. it was a great effort, and the thing kind of doubling back on the defensive problems they seem to have is, for some reason this year, they've been able to shut down McDavid and Draisaitl. I think they combined, they have 3 points all year and no goals. So, you know, it's just one of those weird things where apparently they know how to play those two guys, but, you know, when they play the other teams, like, you know, they forget how to play defense, whatever. But just one of those interesting notes. But yeah, it was a great effort. It was good to see the one come out flying, kind of, like you said, dominate, shut them down, kind of choke the Oilers out of the game pretty early. It was nice to see. And I mean, Edmonton's a team the Canadians are chasing. So it was, you know, you felt like, okay, that might have been a bit of a statement win. I know the Oilers might be kind of not playing their best, but it was a bit of a, you know, like I said, a bit of a statement win. I know that term kind of gets thrown around often, but it was nice to see. And it was nice to see the team didn't suffer, because they had the week off. It was nice to see they didn't sort of work kind of out of sync, because I'm sure they weren't allowed to practice or anything either. So, yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. The hit, I was not a fan of at all. I think it was exactly the kind of hit they're trying to get out of hockey. I think the one saving grace for Connor McDavid was the height difference. You know, because everyone wants, you know, and I get this, and I kind of got into it a bit with a reporter, an Edmonton reporter. I'm not going to use a name or anything, but, like, he had posted something saying, like, anyone who thinks this is, like, a suspendable hit is, you know, I don't know. It was kind of saying, like, if you think it's a suspendable hit, you're crazy or you're an idiot or, you know.
Okay.
No. So he said it. And I was just kind of like, and to be fair, I do follow this guy, and I don't necessarily think he's overly a homer or anything like that. But you see it all the time where, you know, player on team that someone covers makes a questionable/borderline play, especially if it's the best player in the NHL, and the media people will come out and kind of defend it. And I didn't like it. And so I kind of, and then we got into a back and forth privately. But I mean, I don't know what the point is. He just driving up to his head. It was late. It was premeditated. He was trying to hit his head. He did hit his head, just because everyone says, well, he hit him in the chest first. He's driving his elbow up to his head. So if McDavid was, like, you know, 2 inches taller, that's catching him in the chin. So I think, you know, I don't think Connor McDavid's an overly dirty player. I think he was just frustrated and got really angry and reacted and did something stupid. And as anyone who's ever played sports before, that's any kind of like true competitive nature, that can happen. You know, I'm not saying it happens like on the pond or anything like that, but if you're playing in any kind of, like, I mean, I've done stupid things playing high school sports or, you know, when I played rugby externally, I mean, obviously it's not top tier or anything, but you get into a game, things happen, you lose your cool, you know, it happens to everybody. So that's what I saw. I did not think for a second he would be suspended because of who he is. I know he's been suspended before, but there's no way I thought because of all the, it hit him in the chest and blah, blah, blah. I didn't think there would be a suspension. I thought it could have been more like, you know, the big thing was everyone was like, if you think this is more than a minor penalty, you're crazy. And it's just, that was kind of like, so we're now allowed to even discuss it, right? Like this play, you know, that's kind of what pissed me off of what the guy said. It's like, oh, if you think it's more than this, you don't know hockey or something.
Number one, he didn't have the puck.
This is a bad play.
So you have that problem right there. So that's just interference.
Well, it was late.
You 2 minute penalty. Number two, there can be no doubt that he was aiming at his head. There's just the way that he follows through and finishes the hit. There's just no way that you could deny there was an element of premeditation there. He starts it. He covers half the width of the rink to try and make that hit. So that part's crazy. But the thing that I found interesting was that McDavid was not the only guy fined $1,000, or $5,000, which is the maximum. Nathan MacKinnon also was fined for throwing the helmet. Now, when I think about those two things,
that was hilarious, though.
One of them seems a lot more wrong to me than the other. And yet both of them are penalized in the same way. And I think it's important to say a $5,000 fine is pocket change for these guys.
It's not even, it's, what is it? For especially McDavid, I know, you mean, in the grand scheme of sports, he's probably still vastly underpaid for who he is, like how important he is. But yeah, I mean, it's like not even half a day's pay for him.
If you're caught speeding, the cost of your fine is based on your income. So if you make, I don't know, $40,000 a year or euros or whatever, you're assessed at one thing. If you make millions of dollars, you can be assessed the same percentage in terms of the ticket and the lower salary. So you can see $6,000, $7,000 fines for speeding. I'm not saying the NHL needs to go that way, but if you're going to say that we're not going to suspend and that the only punishment that person faces other than a penalty is some monetary fine, the fines have to have more teeth. If you're saying that the idea is to dissuade them from doing it in the future. Now, your point is we don't want to see headshots in the game. This was a headshot. I don't care if it started at his chest and moved up to his face. There's no doubt that it was there was head contact and that it was deliberate. So, I mean, yeah, he's a star in the game, et cetera, et cetera. I guess some people would say it's good that he got fined because there might have been an era in hockey where no one would have even batted an eye at that. And so the fact that he got fined suggests that it's something more than a minor penalty. The fact that there wasn't even a hearing, I think, that would have been the next step, I think, if you wanted to say we want to get serious about this. Because either the rules apply to everybody or they don't. And if they don't, you're always going to have people taking runs because they're always going to imagine they're the ones that the rules don't apply to.
Yeah, I mean, look, the NHL and the NHL Player Safety, NHLPA, all these people, all these organizations or whatever you want to call them, have worked really hard to make this not, I don't know how, working hard to make it not have teeth. Sort of, right? I mean, the NHL, you know, they say the big thing, but obviously, you know, they don't want hitting out of the game because it's a big selling point. The NHL player safety doesn't do enough in terms of fines and suspensions. I mean, I know these things are sometimes they're collectively bargained, but, you know, there has to be a point where if you want to take this stuff seriously, there needs to be, you know, I remember when Matt Cook was doing all of his stupid stuff before he kind of got exiled. You know, because there's a precedent set. And, okay, yeah, the precedent was set, but things have changed. So you can't keep using the same precedent that's old based on a style of hockey that isn't played anymore. I always hated that, well, he got suspended one game, so we can't go more than three, even though he, tried to kill them. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean? Like, they had all these stupid rules to sort of suppress suspensions and deterrence for this stuff. And the NHLPA is just as bad because they're part of it. They don't want it. They don't want their players fined. They don't want their players suspended. And whenever these big things happen, if a player does get a big suspension, and I know they have to do it, but they're always trying to work their way to make it less of a suspension and stuff like that. And so all this stuff works together to sort of suppress any deterrence that you want to make. No one wants, like, it seems like they don't want to do it, and when they happen, they don't want to enforce them strongly. And so why is anything going to change? Nothing. And then I know we're talking about an isolated incident about, you know, like I said, the best player in the game. Losing is cool, and no one's saying he needed to be suspended for 2 months, right? I mean, but you got to make a stand if you want to take this issue seriously. And my point with this other guy, too, is, you know, the big reason why this is, A, not being, like, being dismissed is because of who hit it. If it was Zach Cassian who did it, or God forbid if Kotkaniemi did it to McDavid, you know, the world would have grinded to a halt. So that's sort of the point I was trying to make. Like, it was a bad hit. It needs to be addressed and talked about. I don't think anything's going to happen, but that doesn't change the fact that maybe it should have happened. You know, like, he should have been suspended, or he should be able to be fined more than $5,000. It's just frustrating the way the system is set up, and I'm not saying it's any better in other sports because they all have their own issues with this kind of stuff, but, you know, it's just really frustrating that, like you said, you know, a guy trying to knock someone's head off with their elbow is the same fine as a guy who throws a helmet at someone's gut. It's almost like, well, you know, attempted murder and, I don't know, stealing from the general store have the same sentence. It's kind of like, you know, it doesn't make sense, right? They're not the same thing. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I don't think anything's going to change. I think, you know, it's already kind of not being talked about anymore. It just made me laugh because, again, in this exchange with this guy, I didn't say it, but in my head, I'm like, I remember when Shea Weber cross-checked Austin Matthews and how everyone all of a sudden started talking about how cross-checking in front of the net is a real problem in hockey, you know? And, like, so, I don't know. It's just, you know, if it was the other way around, this would have been a way bigger issue. I think, you know, if had it been Kotkaniemi or had it been another player that hit Kotkaniemi, I think there would have been a suspension. You know, and that's sort of frustrating. I understand that star players play with other rules, you know, they're treated a little bit differently, and I understand that. But, you know, you still got to kind of call a spade, and that was a dirty hit, and it probably deserved a suspension.
I will say, I really
don't know. The whole...
He gets hassled all the time, and every once in a while, he just needs to lash out, and that's just normal. Like, I just...
Oh, God.
That, to me, is... I like Weeks on the Hockey Night in Canada broad. I just thought that was a pretty brutal... Yeah, it's a brutal
thing. Well, it's an excuse.
I don't make any sense.
Well, Sid Sixero, I do not really like him very much, but every so often some of his tweets pop up because people I know... And he said the same thing. He was like, he gets hassled with him, so I don't care if, you know, he takes whatever every once in a while. I'm like, you're either against headshots or not. I mean, I get it. He gets hassled and things don't get called, slashes and hacks and all that stuff. I get it. But that's like saying, well, you know, someone bullied me so I shot them. Well, you know, I every once in a while, I just got to let off some steam, you know? It's also this, like, half... It's a stupid, like, well, it's not stupid. This is like stupid hockey culture where it's like, they got to police themselves out there. I'm like, well, no, they don't, because this is what happens when they do that. And we can tie it all back to the officiating, but, like, I don't know. It's because it's Connor McDavid. No one wants to really just sit there and go, like, ooh, that wasn't a very nice play. They, like, people want to make excuses for it. People want to say it wasn't as bad as it was. And, I mean, that's just the reality, especially if you're, you know, an Edmonton fan. You know, you don't want to, like, any fan. People don't want their players to be dirty or do dirty things. And especially if it's Edmonton, so much of your team's success is sort of centered around that one player. So, you know, you don't want to see them lost for any period of time. And you kind of are probably deep down a little annoyed, frustrated watching that game as a fan. And kind of, we're like, you know, sometimes you're watching a game and you see, like, it's not going well. You get annoyed and you're like, God, just hit somebody, you know? Just to sort of get some kind of revenge or whatever. And I'm not necessarily saying, like, you know, cross-check someone in the face, but you want some kind of comeuppance for the team while your team is getting dominated, I guess.
If you want a bright side.
And so I understand it.
You did get called for a penalty. So it wasn't as if the officials on the ice were saying that was acceptable. I don't buy any of the arguments that have justified it. And I don't like the idea that different players have different rules. I think that that's outdated thinking, and we got to move beyond it. But, you know, good for KK for not being deterred. And I really like his game in terms of his confidence and coming down the ice. He is still a little floppy, a little loosey-goosey sometimes. But I saw him make some incredible passes, even last night. Finding the puck, managing to create opportunities from seemingly nothing. And that's the thing that's special about KK. There's always a chance. So from Edmonton, yeah. And a shutout for Carey Price, we went to Thursday night's game against Ottawa, which, again, was a dominant performance. I was sad that they couldn't hold on for Jake Allen's shutout, but yeah. They looked really good.
Yeah, and that's where, I guess that's what we're saying, how the disappointment from what happened on Saturday, because it was another, like I said, it was a game where, oh, the Canadians are finally treating the Senators like they're the Senators and sort of putting their foot down and choking the game out of them and not letting them do anything. And so it kind of added to this my personal thought that maybe they've something happened on that week off, something clicked and they've turned the corner, and maybe they have. I mean, teams will have bad games all the time, but it's just frustrating that how it happened and how they looked. But yeah, that game on Thursday was really fun to watch, and a lot of, you know, if you're a Habs fan anyway, and like you said, it sort of mirrored the game against the Oilers, where they were able to just sort of take an early lead and just kind of choke them out of the game. Not that late power play goal notwithstanding, which was, you know, you just felt pretty bad for Jake Allen because he's been, you know, a very solid add for the team, and you would have liked to have seen him get his first shutout, and it would have been nice to have back-to-back shutouts for the Canadians as well. So, but other than that, it was, I think, almost a, you know, probably their two best games of the year back-to-back, I would think.
Yeah, totally. And the big thing about Thursday night was the performance of Jake Evans, who was just fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, all over the ice, throwing hits, making passes, taking shots, set up Corey Perry. I mean, he legit could have had a couple of goals and three or four assists in terms of how he was playing. Again, on the third line. And one of the talking points I saw was, this is why competition is good, right? We've got Staal coming in next week. It's not 100% clear where Jake Evans fits in the lineup right now. I guess, you know, there's some discussion that Staal plays in the wing, but he definitely made a strong case for himself on Thursday. Didn't look particularly bad, I didn't think, on last night's game. But, you know, what? Maybe we should talk about, like, what does this lineup look like next week? Because we saw Dominic Ducharme mix up the lines quite a bit. I think with I don't think you could call it a successful experiment. Neither of the lines looked particularly good, I didn't think. Although, obviously, Anderson just sort of muscled his way down a few times, took a pass from Suzuki and made some nice goals. But I don't know, what's your take on lineup next week?
Well, obviously Eric Staal, they already said, I think he's playing on Monday, I believe the next game is. So he's definitely drawing in. I think it'll be good for, I don't think Evans draws out, I hope not. Even when he's been out of the lineup, I don't think he's deserved it. I think he's been pretty consistent most of the year, you know? I mean, for what he's supposed to be doing. Except fourth line guy, penalty killer. I don't think he's played really, I don't think he's had too many, like, terrible games, you know? So sometimes when he gets scratched, I'm always a little puzzled. But I think having Staal there, even though, you know, he's not having a good face-off here with Buffalo, or he's not, you know, traditionally he's not like a Patrice Bergeron in the face-off circle, but it'll just be good for the young guys, Evans included, to have a, he'd do like an old pro, right? But like, he's been playing for a long time. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's won a gold medal. He knows how to do, you know, he knows how to play. He knows how to play smart, which sometimes can help a guy, help young kids, you know, like they have all this skill and excitement and enthusiasm, but knowing how to play smart sometimes is just as important. So I think it'll be helpful. I don't know how he's going to play. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to start him at center, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, him and Evans kind of rotate back and forth. It helps to have, I guess, that sort of versatility with your lineup, to have guys who can both play center and play the wing.
I'm thinking about defensive zone face-offs, right? When that fourth line finds itself for whatever reason in the defensive zone, will Evans or Staal take the face-off? And I think having that ability, I mean, I think you want to have Staal defensively and you want to have Evans offensively in terms of like shifting off on that role. I just don't know how easy it is to move back and forth through neutral zone to sort of make that transition. So I'm curious how that's going to work out.
Yeah, well, but obviously we'll see what happens. I don't know how they're going to do it either. I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But I guess if, let's say, I guess if the faceoff's defensively, then a defensive zone one, then, you know, Staal maintains the center role. And then if it's the other way around and it's Evans, you know, I guess it depends where they are. I don't, for faceoffs anyway. It'll be fun to see what Staal brings. I mean, again, expectations have to be managed. He's not Erik Staal of 2009 here, and he's 35 years old. He's, you know, he still had some pretty good seasons in his later years. So hopefully, you know, not, this season notwithstanding, hopefully it's just the Buffalo of it all. Like everyone else in Buffalo is just kind of tanking. So maybe he'll feel reinvigorated in Montreal. But yeah, it's good. Like you said, it's good to have the competition. It's good to have this sort of depth that means players, if you're coming into the lineup, you can't necessarily slack. You know, your position is not safe. There's guys who can take it. There's guys who can play in the NHL. It's not nobodies or not just, you know, they're not just sort of borderline players or fringe players. They're guys who've played in the NHL. They're guys who have NHL experience. They can, you know, they could be in the lineup on another team. So I agree that the competition is good. And I think it's brought out the best in most of the guys, at the, especially this week. I think since the trade, you know, we saw Lehkonen play a bit. I mean, last night maybe not, but, you know, in the two games before, Lehkonen was playing pretty well. Byron was playing pretty well. Armia didn't play. So, I mean, he's kind of a bit on the bubble, but maybe he draws back in after a game like last night. They might want to change up some stuff. It's good. I mean, I'm not worried so much about the forwards. I think it's good that they have that. It's good that, you know, it seems like all lines kind of are always going because they have that, you know, we talk about, they have that depth. It's, for me, it's still the defense. And there's no, like, I don't see help coming from anywhere other than a trade, and I don't think that's happening.
Say that, but there's been a couple of interesting, I mean, first of all, I'm still really curious about Cale Fleury and whether he's ready to make sort of the next step. But did you notice the Canadiens signed another depth defenseman? Got a different name.
I can't remember his name. I saw it.
Spogner, I think. No, wait, hold on. I want to get it right.
I gotta look it up too.
But yeah, you know, he sort of come in as an older guy. He's 25, 26 years old. Played for Laval. Played really, really well. And finds himself with another year contract. And the way that people are talking about him is that he's someone that we might actually see with the big club. It's
Corey Schwenman?
Schudeman, I think is pronounced. Schudeman.
Yeah. Schudeman.
There you go. But it is a different one. And I just, you know, obviously it's a depth move. Obviously you don't want to get too excited about what that means, but at the same time, like, I like Mete and Romanov together. I like Weber and Edmondson together more than I liked Sherratt and Weber together. I know Sherratt is due to come back at some point, probably not, we're talking about weeks, not after days, but I think Kulak is the one I worry about, and I know that Petrie and Kulak have played well together. And maybe last night was just an aberration. But I either find him to be a dominant player or a tire fire. And there's just not anything in between. He just never has a okay night. And that worries me.
Yeah, and that's Kulak, though. I mean, there's a reason why he was on waivers with Calgary where we got him. And I actually like the player, but I think because he shows these flashes, people get overexcited, I think. He's perfectly suited for a bottom six role. And that's where he should be playing. But because the Canadiens lack top-end defensive talent at the moment, guys are getting pushed up the lineup. And it's frustrating because this has been an issue again. I mean, we can talk about... But, you know, it's been an issue with the Canadiens since, you know, Andre Markov left. So, you know, I know Kulak and Petrie, like you said, have played pretty well together. But the thing with Kulak is he's inconsistent. And that's sort of what makes him, that's the difference, right? Between being a sixth, a fifth, fifth or sixth defenseman and a 3-4 or a 1-2. It's consistency. I saw someone tweet something interesting, and I kind of agree, where they were talking how Jeff Petrie had a rough night last night. And they were saying how, you know, Jeff Petrie is a good defenseman, but he is prone to sort of ups and downs, you know, like almost any player. But then they said, you know who's not really up prone to ups and downs? Like Victor Hedman. It's, you know, the lows are never that low.
Yep.
So that's sort of the difference between what Jeff Petrie is and what, like, a true... And again, no, not trying to throw Petrie
well,
under the
bus.
Well,
but a top four versus a top two, right? I mean...
Yeah, exactly. And so it's... So the thing with that, that's the thing with Brett Kulak, where he's it's just a bigger extreme, right? It's the highs are not nearly going to be as high, but the lows are much lower. So it's just over the overall depth. I think if Kulak, if these guys were slotted properly in a lineup, and I know that's easier said than done, but then things would look a bit better. But because they're not, they're getting overexposed. And I know Ben Chiarot, like you said, is coming back, so it's going to rejig the defense a bit more, but. I mean, we saw before he left, Ben Chiarot wasn't really playing that well. And maybe he comes back and plays very well, and that, you know, I think we're all hoping that that's something that can happen. But he also isn't going to give the Canadians what they really need also. They already have Shea Weber. They already have Joel Edmondson. You know, they have guys who are big and tough to play against. I'm using our quotes because it doesn't seem like it. You know, in their own end.
Did Weber win that fight? But, I saw everyone calling it a draw. I don't know.
It was... He got... Well, I mean, whatever. Kachuk got it, got him, and then he just sort of tried to bull him over. The thing is, he's 30. I don't want Shea Weber fighting. I mean, no. I know that's the whole point, but, like, the Canadians don't have... It's just, it reminded me a bit, not that it's at the same level at all, but I remember when they played the Rangers in the playoffs and he kind of ragdolled, I think it was Hayes? Anyway, ragdolled one of the players in the Rangers who was kind of being, you know, a bit of a pain in the ass for the series. I think it was game 4. But then he took a 5-minute penalty, and which, you know, everyone's like, oh, yeah, defending the team, blah, blah, blah. But then he was off the ice for 5 minutes and the Rangers scored. So... You know, it's nice to have that guy, but if you can't afford to lose him, I mean, now maybe it's a little different, but if you can't afford to lose this guy, him taking penalties like that is not helpful. Him being that difficult to play against, if it's going to lead him to being off the ice, and Shea Weber doesn't take a ton of penalties, but he can't be the really tough guy everyone hates to play against if he's not willing to do that stuff because he can't afford to take himself off the ice. So, we'll, I don't know. It's just interesting that, not interesting, frustrating that you know, the Canadians are kind of seem to be set up front, which is great, finally, you know. But now they have this issue on defense where guys are just pretty much everyone on the team, and maybe except for Jeff Petrie, is playing out of position, like out of role, I should say. And
yeah,
it's not a recipe for success if you have everyone sort of out of their roles and you have too many 4, 5, 6s and, you know, 1, 1, 2, 3, if you know what I mean.
How much would you give up at this point for a top four D?
A lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the year. I don't think Weber's getting any better. I don't think Price is getting any better. I think our young players are getting better, but I don't think... Like, I think it's this year, and I think, therefore, you kind of got to go all in. And I think, arguably, they have in many ways, right? We've got Anderson, we've got Toffoli, we've got NHL depth. But I don't, you know, defense is the problem. No one disagrees. Chiarot is not the magical answer. If we thought that we were going to see... some Laval talent make their way up. I think we would have seen it by now. That leaves trying to acquire a top 4D, and that's going to be not cheap. But what's the alternative?
Hoping Carey Price finds his 2014 form, which seems to be the sort of default setting for this team. You know what I mean? Like, they're just hoping that Carey Price can cover up the warts. And to some extent, that's every goalie in the league, you know. But the Canadians really got by the early part of the Marc Bergevin experience because Carey Price was you know, one of the top three players in the league, regardless of position, right? Or top five. You know, he was just that good.
By the way, the Mark Bergevin Experience is the worst nightclub in Quebec City. I don't know if you've been there. It's horrible. Tight shirts everywhere. It's terrible.
Axe body spray?
Yeah, avoid.
But you know, so I would pay, to answer your question, it would pay a lot. I mean, obviously the name that's out there is Matthias Ekholm. If he's even available.
Right.
You know, I mean, everyone's talking about it. I don't know if Nashville's in the state they're in, they might want to reload, but maybe they don't want to trade a guy who's two more years on his contract making, who is vastly underpaid. You know, maybe they want to hold on to that guy. So.
Well, yeah, they're also winning right now. I mean,
yeah.
Nashville, I think when everyone was assuming they were going to make a move, they were looking bad. They're not looking so bad anymore. And so, I don't know.
It's, yeah, right now they're in a playoff spot, so why are they going to make that move? So, you know, and you look at other teams who are struggling and trying to find players to pick off the heap there, but there's a reason you want these players, right? Like, do you want to take the number one defenseman off of, like, the Detroit Red Wings if he was available? Like, you know, okay, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head who that would be, and maybe it would be an improvement, but you know what I mean? Like, you're thinking the number one defense, and you want a guy who's going to be, like, great. I mean, I guess you could try and pry them away from Columbus, but I, you know, they're not trading Seth Jones, I don't think. They're not trading Werenski, so, you know, do you want to trade for David Savard? I doubt it. I mean, he's not going to fix the problems the Canadians have. So it's just interesting, not interesting, frustrating that, you know, this has been an issue for since Andre Markov, since the PK Subban trade, and since Andre Markov left, this has been a hole in the lineup, and now the hole is just getting exacerbated with everyone getting a bit older. And, you know, I don't know. I agree with you, though. This is because it's such a wacky, weird season, and because it feels a bit more open, is just to take a swing. You know? Like, this is the thing with Bergevin with me. He never takes the swing. And I've been beating this drum for a while. Like, you know, Eric Staal's a nice pickup, but also that's not a swing. If someone said, take Eric Staal, we'll keep half of his salary, and you'll have to give us a 3 and a 5 and a bad draft and a random draft where no one's playing. I mean, of course, it's like a no-brainer.
Well, it's more than, yeah, a swing to me means it's a 50-50 trade and you're hoping that it's going, or even a 60-40 trade against, but you're still going to go for it because you think.
Not even that. It's, okay, we need this play. You want to get, to me, a swing is you trade a high prospect or, you know, a first overall pick and some, like, you give up a considerable package to get someone who can help your team. I'm not talking about getting someone who's maybe going to do it. Like, I'm using this example. I know this isn't going to happen, but, like, you know, Victor Hedman. Making a trade, like, if that kind of guy was available because, let's say, for whatever reason, Tampa Bay was tanking for some stupid reason and Victor Hedman was available, but they're not going to give him away. If you want to send, like, I don't know. I can't think of a package off the top of my head, but you would give considerable amount of collateral to get that player, right? You would maybe consider trading Cole Caulfield, a first-round pick, something else to get that guy in your building. Bergevin doesn't do that, or hasn't done it yet. All his trades are either mid to late draft picks for guys or player for player, right? You know, Drouin for Sergachev, Subban,
Dunn?
Weber.
Where are you on Vince Dunn?
I like Vince Dunn. I think he's a bit... I don't think he's a top-pair guy. He's interesting. I know his name's been thrown around. I know from writing The Last Word, there's a guy who's now a managing editor who liked to sing the praises of Vince Dunn. I think he's pretty good, but I mean, he's not a guy I'm going to sell out for. That's
well,
what you're asking.
No.
I think he's someone that could be had that could help the team, yes. And
but he's
but
a...
yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, he's a third pair defenseman, right? I mean, on a Stanley Cup team, where's he play right now? He's got some offensive upside. He's cheap for what he is.
I mean, he has the skill set that the Canadians need on defense, right? He's a puck mover. He can skate. He gives offense. They could use him. You know, he can play on the power play, which I know this might be... No, it's not sacrilegious to say. I don't want to see Shea Weber on a power play anymore. Like,
well, certainly not the first unit. If they want to move the
not
puck
at all.
Around a
I
lot
mean,
in the first
I know
half
he's,
and then...
He's got his shot, but it's not the weapon it was, and it's overplayed. And when he has to play with the puck, when he's forced to hold on to the puck, it's ugly. So I don't want to... Like, he doesn't know what to do with the puck sometimes. So I just don't want to see it. I know why he's there, but if they're just going to have someone playing high on him all the time and he can't use his shot, he's useless. So figure out something else.
I mean, but, if it's not Vince Dunn, I tend to agree with you. I don't think Ekholm is available right now. I mean, I think if you're Nashville, unless you are reading the tea leaves and say, even if we make the playoffs, we're not making a run this year, therefore this is the time to reload. If it's not done, then it's somebody that's not on anybody's radar, right? Because nobody else moves the needle. Goligoski or whatever, that's not...
No, even the guys we talked about last week. Brothers,
that's not your solution, right? So
no. Yeah, that's all we need to
do. So it's either somebody that we don't know about, or it's done, or it's nobody. And I think we might have to, you and I have been sort of saying that if they're going to make a move, we probably would have seen it this week so that they could... number one, be first to market, which means you won't tend to overpay a little bit, but also that you'd have somebody complete quarantine and be able to play, your last, 15 games to round out this season. And obviously that hasn't happened, so we have one more week where something might be possible. But I don't know, Connor, what happens if we don't make the trade?
Well, we're seeing what happens. Unless Carey Price can rebound and play, even if he plays like he played last year in the playoffs where he played very well, that's what we need to have a chance. That's all it is. We've seen it. I mean, maybe the Canadians can get through a round depending on who they play in the first round, because I do think they're probably earmarked for the playoffs because, Vancouver's in their, really unfortunate situation with all the COVID stuff going on there. You feel bad. Hopefully everyone's okay. And Calgary, too, they're really kind of up and down. And especially, when the Canadiens are off, they didn't lose any ground in the division, which sort of says what's going on with the teams below them. Unless Carey Price rounds into form, we're going to see the same problems that are going to make you frustrated with how they play in their own end. They're going to give too many chances, too many mental errors for whatever reason by everybody. It's not. I know we like to kind of harp on the defense, but it's just how they play in the defensive zone. It's mind-boggling that it's been an issue for this long. It's sort of the same stuff over and over, and I don't get it. But, it's going to be maybe they went around and that's it. If they get, if they bring someone in who can sort of help guys slot properly, which I know is asking a lot and probably not likely to happen, which then things, who knows? But, I think it's going to be another one and done, or maybe, one round maybe. Just because in the playoffs, you need to be able to defend. You can't keep giving up grade A chances like they do. And I know everyone wants the high octane, fire wagon hockey, but that doesn't play in the playoffs, unfortunately. Games are tighter. Games are a little bit less high scoring. You got to be able to sort of defend. And if there's one thing the Canadians, despite how promising some of the season has gone and all that, they've shown that they don't have a great ability to defend. And that, I think, is a big problem. And that's something that needs to be addressed. So. Until anything happens. All
right, so let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on from defense and talk about some positive news, which is Cole Caulfield.
Yeah.
Likely winning the Hobie Baker. Starting in Laval. I'm trying to desperately figure out how I can watch his first game in Laval. It looks like I have to spend money to do it, but I might be willing to do that just to have the experience and say that I saw him play.
Oh, you can listen to it on the radio at least. I know seeing and listening are two different things, but the TSN.
Well, no, but I think listening to friend of the pod Sean Campbell call a Laval game really feels like I'm leveling up in my Habs fandom, But I think I do actually want to. I want to see how he plays
for sure.
And I guess I could. I can mute because the RDS call is not going to mean much to me. I can listen to Sean Campbell and try to sync it up that way. But I do think I think it's exciting. And I just wanted to get your sense of whether we see him in Montreal. Is this going to be they call him up for a few games near the end of the season, provided they're not in an absolute dogfight to get to the playoffs? Or do you think he has a legit chance to play in the postseason for the Canadiens this year?
It depends, right? Everyone's kind of... The big concern about Caulfield is his size. He's not very big. And, I mean, not saying that he won't, you know, succeed, but that's sort of, I guess, everyone's wondering if he's too slight right now. But he is 20, and he is a bit more developed than, say, an 18-year-old. I for sure think he's going to play. Whether or not he plays a big role is... that I really don't know. The problem is they have such a logjam on the right side of the... You know, on the right wing with Anderson, Toffoli, and Armia. There's not much space there. I know they can sort of jig things around a bit. And is Gallagher on the right side too? So, like, you know, there's just a lot of guys.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of a logjam. I know guys can flip around and stuff like that. But, you know, you don't necessarily want to have Cole Caulfield playing on the fourth line. I mean, you could, but...
Well, you might see him on the power
play. No, I know, but, you know, the thing is, if he really looks like he belongs, then you don't necessarily want to hide him on your fourth line. So, he will for sure will definitely get a taste of the NHL. I think he's going to start maybe a week or two in Laval. I think it all depends, right? If he looks head and shoulders above everyone in Laval, well, which is asking a lot, but if he looks really good in Laval, I think he's going to get called up. I think the Canadiens, for as good as they've been, do lack a true elite sniper, and I think that's what he brings. You know, I think his finishing, he's like a true finisher, like, and I'm not saying he is this player, but like Brett Hull, right? Brett Hull is a freaking sniper who would score all the goals from everywhere. And I think Caulfield has a bit of that. So it's important to have it because, you know, when you need a goal, you need, you know, those guys are the guys that usually get you the goals. So I think we will see him. I'm excited too. I think it should be this week. If not, it should be this week. He debuts. I'm not sure which game. It's either the 4th or the 6th. Not the 4th or the 6th. Today's the 4th. It's either the 6th or maybe the 8th, I think. Depending on when he was in Laval or in quarantining.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be against Toronto.
Oh. And I looked in it. I mean, I couldn't find anything solid anywhere yet. So I think it all depends. I don't know when he got to Montreal. But yeah, obviously everyone is super excited for his debut. I mean... We've been hearing and seeing all of his successes. I mean, I don't think I saw so many Montreal Canadiens fans following Wisconsin hockey as I did this year. So everyone's excited and with good reason. So it'll be fun to see. And he will play. And I think everyone's hoping he can turn into that kind of Cale Makar or, you know, guy that signs from a university that, you know, can step right in and make a huge impact. I don't see why he couldn't. So yeah, it's definitely exciting times. I think if he does show he belongs or can prove his sort of NHL medal, I think, yeah, it makes it... I mean, it's got to be done quickly, but, you know, then it can help facilitate maybe a move. You can move someone off the roster to try and get that defenseman as part of a package. But, you know, that's...
I think he clears quarantine on Monday. Perfect. I don't think he'll play the Tuesday, April 6th game. I do think he'll play the Friday,
April 9th. There you go, yeah, okay.
And that's against Toronto. Yeah. And I could be wrong, but I think that's when the Hobie Baker is announced.
Oh, well, it would just be a whole... It would be Cole Caulfield day.
Well, and if the Montreal Canadiens have any sense, they will make that game free to stream. Yes. And because it doesn't interfere with the Montreal Canadiens and their schedule this week. So
yeah, a lot to look forward to this week, yeah. If you're a Canadiens fan, obviously, like you mentioned, 4 games this week, Edmonton, Toronto, and then 2 with Winnipeg, and then also Cole Caulfield's debut at some point. Both actually, if he even plays on Tuesday, neither of those days are the Habs don't play. So like you said, I think they should make that game available because I think that's a lot of eyeballs are going to want to be on that game to see number 44 for Laval, which that number is no bueno, but...
Yeah, talk about passing the torch, right? I mean...
But it'll be definitely interesting. A lot of interesting things happening for the Canadiens. You know, Eric Staal's debut, Cole Caulfield's debut, big week of hockey, so it'll be fun. Hopefully they can bounce back from that brutal effort last night against the Senators and turn around and definitely start making their charge to the playoffs because, yeah, you want to go in kind of riding high and it's not getting any easier.
Yeah, I'm circling Wednesday's game against Toronto. That is the team, I think, that you really have to measure yourself against in the North. And we haven't seen them for, what, more than a month? Yeah. And I think that's the one that I'm really interested in seeing. I'm slightly nervous about the Monday game against Edmonton, given the shutout the week before. I think that Edmonton's going to come back flying, and I hope the Canadians can put this game last night, you know, behind them and move on. I could see them splitting the Winnipeg home and home. We got Thursday night at home and then Saturday night at home. So, I mean, I think there's three winnable games there. I just... Wednesday night to me is the one that I'm circling.
Yeah, again, it's another sort of litmus test because Toronto is clearly the class of the division at the moment. And like you said, we haven't seen... It's been over a month. I don't think... Did they even play in March? No, they didn't even play in March. So it's been since February. Mid-February, the 20th, was the last time the Canadians played the Leafs. Wow. So we're going to see them a lot over the last 6 weeks here. but yeah, we'll just hope. I mean, Monday night, I agree with you. The Oilers are probably going to want a little bit of payback. Hopefully, Koskinen's in nets because that guy is terrible. But I think we're going to see Mike Smith probably. It's a big week. I mean, look, they're chasing all these teams in the division. So if they want to have a chance to sort of leapfrog anybody, this would be a week to sort of put some points together. Because, yeah, Edmonton, Toronto, Winnipeg. These are all teams you're playing. If the Canadians make the playoffs, which it looks like they're on track to, these are the teams you're playing. So, you know. It's time to sort of put up, put some statement wins together against teams you're competing against. So it'll be a big week, and like we said, lots of debuts, lots of energy, maybe a surprise move or two from the GM who likes to do that to us. But I'm not holding my breath. Anyway.
I think this week we're watching for a trade to figure out if they can shore up and solidify their defense. We're watching for Cole Caulfield. And it's our first four-game week. So, as you say, lots to watch for your Montreal Canadiens. And let's hope this week is more like the beginning of last week and not like
for
the
sure.
end.
And with that, I am Connor LaPalme signing off for the Last Word on Habs podcast. Everyone enjoy the week. Enjoy all the debuts. Check out Cole Caulfield. And for those who celebrate, happy Easter, since it's Easter Sunday for those who are celebrating. So, there you go. Hope you enjoy all your chocolate.
Yeah. Nothing says Easter to me like telling our kids a rabbit brought chocolate eggs in the night.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.